For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. Over the past 40 years, Australians working in industries with a risk of exposure to dust have been of the belief that the regulations were keeping them safe. But now diseases such as coal workers' pneumoconiosis and silicosis are re-emerging, particularly in the artificial stone industry.
I mean, it was entirely predictable that this would cause this problem, but none of the artificial stone was labelled at all.
That was Associate Professor Deborah Yates, a respiratory physician at St Vincent's Hospital in Sydney. She and other colleagues from the Thoracic Society of Australia and New Zealand have written a perspective for the MJA. In it, they describe new recommendations designed to facilitate early detection and intervention of dust-related lung diseases. Associate Professor Yates is my special guest today. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you.
Perhaps we'd best start with the basics. What are pneumoconioses?
Pneumoconioses are dust diseases that are produced by the inhalation of dust resulting in fibrosis of the lung, any fibrotic disease of the lung due to dust.
What sort of conditions are we talking about?
We're talking about what they used to call black lung or coal workers' pneumoconiosis, silicosis, which is due to the inhalation of silica and silicates. And then there are a whole load of other ones like mixed dust fibrosis. And there are a large number of different types, which I won't go into because it's a bit too complicated. So in this paper, we're dealing mainly with coal workers' pneumoconiosis and with silicosis.
Why are we suddenly interested in these diseases again? I thought coal miners' black lung was a thing of the past.
So it should be. So back in about 2014, no, probably a bit earlier actually, probably about 2012, there was a few cases of coal workers' pneumoconiosis described in Queensland. This was at a time when they had thought there were no cases at all. And what had happened was that they had been misdiagnosed and ascribed to another type of disease. And it was only after one of my colleagues, who was quite astute, said, look, this is a bit of a chance, getting a few cases of sarcoidosis in coal mine workers. Could this be something else? And that actually led to a lot of a revision and a review of the whole scheme of coal workers' pneumoconiosis up in Queensland. A large number of cases were actually discovered. And round about the same time in 2014, we described the first case of artificial stone silicosis in New South Wales. And that is a disease which has been known about for many, many years. But artificial stone as a cause of silicosis is a new entity. It was new to Australia, but it wasn't new to the world. That was due to the fact that workers were really being exposed to terribly, terribly high concentrations of dust, without any sort of understanding of the risks involved at all. So if you look at the number of cases that have been described as around Australia, all over Australia, there have been more than 300. And most of these have occurred in young men at the peak of their working lives. And there have been some deaths, very sadly. There had been pneumoconiosis all these many years. It was just that we'd forgotten about it. Nobody had actually really thought that it was a problem anymore. And the Queensland scheme, which was meant to be finding all the cases, was found to have quite a few problems. Basically, the systems that had been put in place weren't being followed properly. The x-rays weren't being reviewed in the right way. The lung function tests weren't being reviewed in the right way. And so that resulted in an establishment of a National Dust Diseases Task Force, which is making its report in at the end of June.
I thought the reason we'd forgotten about these diseases was because we've been very good at preventing them.
Well, that's what we'd like to think, isn't it? But no, it's not the case at all. The dust levels had gone down, but actually, if you looked at the levels of dust, they're actually higher than they are internationally.
Are there new technologies, new products that are sort of escaping the regulations?
Yes. I mean, artificial stone is a relatively new product. They're not that new. It started to be introduced into Australia in the early 2000s. But also there were huge increases in the number of kitchens and bathrooms that were being constructed and made. And artificial stone is a very attractive product. You can get it in many, many different types of, you know, colours. It's very durable. Uh-huh. And essentially, it's much cheaper. And look, I mean, it was entirely predictable that this would cause this problem, but none of the artificial stone was labelled at all. And the regulator didn't actually seem to understand or cotton onto it. And none of the employees did, and I don't think any of the employers did either, which was a real pity, because if you'd asked any doctor, they'd immediately have said, well, actually.
What's the treatment like? Is it curable? Are these diseases curable?
No, I mean, this is the problem with these diseases, and in fact with quite a lot of lung diseases, is that once you actually have the pathology produced, it's not essentially reversible. We have some evolving treatments, and we ourselves are doing a study into an antifibrotic treatment called nintedanib. It probably will work, actually, in at least to a certain extent, but none of these things are essentially treatable, whereas you'd much rather prevent them in the first place, because these are entirely preventable.
You mentioned earlier that pneumoconioses are fibrotic diseases. Are you finding, I think in your paper you say that it's now a wider, broader range of illnesses than first thought. What's going on there?
Yeah, that's the other thing that really has come to light over the last 20 or 30 years, is that dusts don't just produce pulmonary fibrosis. This has been an area of debate for many years, actually, going back into the 1950s, actually. But over the last 25, 30 years, it's really become very clear that dusts produce different types of fibrotic lung disease, and they also produce COPD. They produce emphysema, and they produce chronic bronchitis, and they also produce lung cancer. The data on silica show that the more silica you inhale, the increased risk of lung cancer that you have, and that's independent of smoking. Everybody has previously thought, oh well, you know, they're smokers, this is the reason that they've got their cancers, and in fact this sort of population does have quite a high risk of tobacco inhalation, but it's a separate and independent risk.
I'm chatting today with Associate Professor Deborah Yates from the University of New South Wales. Her co-authored perspective can be found at mja.com.au, where it is free to access for the next week. Insight Plus, the MJA's weekly online news magazine, also has an article on dust-related lung diseases if you would like to read more. All of our podcasts are available at mja.com.au/podcasts or Spotify, and on Apple Podcasts, where you can also subscribe to our feed. Back to our chat. The TSANZ have brought out a new position statement.
Yes.
What's the role for GPs in all this, Deborah? Because they seem to be, you know, they're frontline, as they always are. What do they need to hear, and what do they need to take from these new guidelines?
I suppose what they really need to do is to know that these diseases are linked to dust exposure. That's probably the first thing, because it's something which hasn't been well understood by the medical profession as a whole, not just general practitioners. So to make the link early on, and to make sure that the people get the appropriate investigations and advice, which is easier said than done in practice, because of the limitations in terms of referrals, because of the fact that the expertise has been lacking, really, because everybody forgot about these diseases. But essentially, if the general practitioners can document the occupational exposures, then that would be really a great help, because a lot of these diseases have a very, very long latency period. So they won't necessarily manifest themselves for, you know, even 20 years after the relevant exposure. And the GPs have wonderful computerized system, and it sits there. So if in 20 years' time the patient turns up and says, look, I've got I was exposed to dust, there's an independent, true record of that, which is actually really helpful, because the other issue that we don't know about in the future is what other types of diseases may be also affected, you know, due to dust inhalation. Because our understanding of the environmental causes of lung disease have really changed hugely over the last 20-odd years. So general practitioners have a really, really important role. I mean, I think in thoracic society, we recognise how limited the time is for seeing patients. But general practitioners have a wonderful long-term relationship with their patients, and they can bring them back. And sometimes things will pop out of the conversation that you wouldn't necessarily get in the less intimate contact that you get as a specialist. I really think they're ideally placed. And I think the other thing to do is not to attribute everything to smoking. I mean, I understand that tendency. It's a normal tendency. But in practice, certainly in terms of smoking-related emphysema, then the contribution, say, from smoking 20 cigarettes a day for 20 years is about the equivalent to being down underneath in the mine for 20 years. So it's equivalent. Wow. So it's an important consideration.
So the new position paper, are there any changes in management, changes in protocols?
Yes. Now, I should add that what we've done is produced a recommendations. There have never been any real Australia-wide protocols for this. So this is new, and there are some being produced by the National Task Force. But what we've recommended is that essentially an increase in frequency of the examinations, the respiratory surveillance for people with dust exposure, and a different type of investigation. Before, we were very reliant on chest x-rays, because chest x-rays are easy to get, but they're very insensitive when looking at this type of disease. I mean, they probably miss 30 to 40% of these cases. And with the changes in technology, CT scanning is very much more available and has a much lower dose of radiation than it ever did. And you can now have a CT scan in 90 seconds. It's actually a much, much better modality for looking at lungs. And that's really pretty much what we have suggested. We've suggested better, so CT scanning when there's any doubt. We've also recommended more sophisticated lung function tests, because it looks again as though the spirometry, just the spirometry testing, is not sufficiently sensitive. And we've recommended that general practitioners should take as much detail as they possibly have time for, think about it, and then ask and refer as early rather than late.
That early referral is pretty important, isn't it? Because you can slow the progress of
that's
these diseases.
That's exactly right. And we, you know, that's the one thing that has been shown to be effective, is that if you actually remove a person who is susceptible, who has had high dust exposures from dust exposure, their disease will be slowed and they may not, you know, they may live their normal lifespan. And that's really important.
What role have unions got to play in this, Deborah?
Unions really have a very important role, and they've been excellent in terms of improving the dust levels, in terms of, you know, supporting the worker. And so they really have a key role to play. The difficulty is that a lot of these workplaces are becoming less and less unionized. For example, with artificial stone, this is a largely ununionized workplace. The other issue is that a lot of people in the artificial stone industry originally came from overseas, and their first language isn't English, and they don't have any familiarity with the union system at all. So essentially, they were without any help whatsoever. Unions are very interested. They're very supportive. They have in the past really been at the forefront of change, making changes which have resulted in huge improvements in people's lives in terms of their sickness. And this time they are actually up there trying very hard to support the patients.
Right.
We all need to work more closely together, because what's happened in the past is there's really hasn't been a closing of the feedback loop. So what's happened is these cases have been even diagnosed and the information has not been fed back to the regulator or to anybody. I think a lot of doctors are just not aware of the fact that Safe Work exists, that there's an agency in every state, and that there is actually quite good advice available. One of the difficulties has been that there used to be doctors in Safe Work. We do have a better appreciation of what these diseases will do in the long run to these patients, and therefore we feel that these agencies should be accessible to all doctors. I mean, you should be able to ring them and talk to them about, you know, individual exposures. And on the whole, the regulatory industrial hygienists are very accessible and very interested and very helpful. But also we do need a little bit more in the way of medical representation in order to try and just close these loops. And the other thing I think that people probably should be aware of is the fact that there are really now excellent resources available on the internet. You can search any dust that you like, any toxic exposure that you like, and you will get immediate results. And we've cited some of these resources in the perspective. So they are there. And we'd really like to encourage general practitioners to take an interest, because really they're ideally placed to help in these sort of circumstances.
Thank you so much for your time,
Pleasure.
Deborah. I really appreciate it. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.